Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, my name is Shelley Siegel, and I'm an atheist, and I'm making this video for We Are Atheism to tell you a little bit about myself and why I'm an atheist. I was brought up as a Jew, and I used to believe in God, the Jewish God, and I used to write songs about God and to pray for my grandparents and my stuffed toy cat. And when I was 16, I learned about evolution, and that was a big shock because that really contradicted what I'd learned about how we came to be from the Bible. So as more and more things started to contradict with my worldview and understanding of things, the more I was exposed to other people's religions and perspectives, the more I was able to be critical of my own understanding of things, and eventually I became an atheist. And I talked to my parents about it, and I talked to my brother about it, and I guess everybody now knows because I wrote an album recently called An Atheist Album, and I talk about some of the things I've learned and some of the things I feel to do with it. And I think it's important that for me to call myself an atheist because I want people to see that an atheist can be a good person, and an atheist can be a loving, warm, kind, caring person. I think I'm those things, and someone that's creative, and someone that makes art, and someone is a good friend, and I feel like a lot of people think of atheists as being scary or evil or uncaring or cold, and I like to fight that stereotype just by using that word to describe how I am. I'm lots of things. I'm sometimes a vegetarian. I believe in some social values. I have dreadlocks. I'm lots of things, but I don't need to be defined by all of them, but I think that it's important to say that you are an atheist if that's how you feel, so that people can understand that atheists are just regular people, just their neighbors and their friends and family, and yeah, so that it's easier for more people to come out with their beliefs, and that maybe the beliefs of non-believers can be represented politically and in our society. So if you are a young person or you're an atheist and you're too scared to talk about it, I hope that some of these videos will make you feel less alone and know that there is community support there for you. And I hope that if you want to talk about those things and you want the people around you to know how you feel, I hope that you can find the courage to bring it up or to openly talk about your worldview. And I'm going to play a song of mine. It's not from an atheist album, it's from another one. It's called My Morality, and it talks about where I get my morality from. And I think a lot of religious people believe that if you don't believe in God or you don't have a rule book, that you can't be a moral person. And this is my response to that claim. My morality has nothing to do with the Bible. By the sea, that
Welcome Shelley Segal to the show. Her latest release, an atheist album, embodies her thoughts on religion. The Australian-based singer-songwriter became involved in secular activism over 2 years ago, despite her father being the president of the local synagogue. Her songs are a passionate response to dogmatic beliefs, inequality, religious oppression, and the idea that only the devout can be grateful and good. An atheist album gives a voice to the often underrepresented views of non-religious people, the fastest-growing minority in many countries.
Hi, Shelley. Are you there?
Hi, Noam.
Hi. Welcome to Fire Talk Productions.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm sorry to get you up so early in Australia.
Oh, no worries. It's a pleasure to be here. I just apologize for my croaky morning voice.
That's all right. What I'd like to start with first is for you to tell everybody how to get in touch with you and to find you on Facebook and your website.
Oh, for sure. So, thanks. My name's Shelley Segal, SHELLEYSEGAL. And my website's shelleysegal.com. You can leave me some voice messages or subscribe, and I also the same on Twitter, and I have a music page on Facebook and Google Plus, and I think that's all the social media I use at the moment.
Yeah, I did see where you could leave a voice message. You could record one. I thought that was a nice little feature.
Yeah, I love it. I love getting messages from people. It's really cool.
And you must get them from all over the world.
Yeah, I just got one this morning from Ohio. Cool.
Now, you just finished a tour, or when did you tour the United States?
Yeah, I got back to Melbourne, my hometown. I got back a week ago, and before that I was touring for about 4 months in the States. And even then that was like, I've been 6 times this year to the U.S., so, just finished that tour now, and it was great. Really enjoyed it.
Now, how do you end up coming over to the United States? Because you're in your mid-20s, correct?
Yes. Bang on, 25.
So that's a pretty big adventure for someone to just come to the United States. And because we have a lot of different religious beliefs over here, believe me, as you can tell by the last election. So tell us what you saw as you went around with a fresh set of eyes.
Well, it was absolutely fascinating, and it was good getting to see so many different places. So I guess the states that I've been to this year, I was in California, Washington, Oregon, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Alabama, Florida, and it was interesting. It was also interesting being there in the lead up to the election. I didn't really, I feel like because I was so involved with the, I was playing at a lot of atheist conventions and atheist meetup groups and even some house parties. So the majority of the people that I was meeting day to day were actually atheists. So I feel like I got a, you know, disproportionate look at American people because they're all very, you know, engaged. They're very engaged politically and they're activists. So it was a, definitely a cool cross-section of the of the country, but I don't feel like it's representative. But yeah, it was so interesting hearing everybody's experiences of how they've come to be in the place that they are now. So a lot of people were brought up in varying religious families, some more restrictive than others, but very, very different beliefs. And some of them have had a really hard time leaving, and some of them, you know, still supported and they're creating communities and they're becoming active and trying to create a constituency that needs to be appealed to by the politicians. And I think from what I've seen leading up to the election, that's really necessary.
Oh, it's very necessary.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like any candidates are being forced to appeal to reason. They're not being forced. They're not being forced to hold to the facts. And it almost feels like that's not important. Like, I wrote a blog post about my impressions of the lead up to the election on Emily Deedle's blog. Emily, it's called Emily Has Books. And on that, I was saying like, it was really striking to me to see all the religious language used in political speeches, because it just doesn't happen here. Even when we have a religious leader, they don't mention it in the same way. Whereas, like, I think the time I was shocked most of the whole year was watching the Democratic National Convention.
Oh yeah,
and seeing everyone standing around, holding hands, praying, like it was so bizarre. didn't.
Yeah, for us watching, it was bizarre as well.
Okay, Is that not normal? Like, because I haven't seen it before.
Well, our government is saturated with religion, and we're doing our best to get it out of there, and they're doing their best to bring it in more. So it's a constant fight. But I think this generation is definitely shifting the way that politics is going to be handled in the future. So,
yeah, it's encouraging. It gives you a bit.
It is encouraging, but there's still a lot of work to be done. So that's why it's important for people like you to put this great music out there and let everybody know that we're, you know, because they demonize us in the media.
Absolutely.
And we're just regular people. So it's important for people to hear songs like you and to see you and know that. Well, she's not scary. She's not this horrible demon, devil child. You know.
Yeah, and that's what so many people are trying to do as well in the movement, and that's normalize atheism. And that's so important. And speaking to people in the movement around the country, even Dave Silverman was saying, he's the president of American Atheists, was saying that he's seen the impact in the last 5 years, you know. The reaction he gets to the T-shirts he wears have changed. People are starting to see it everywhere. And even if they still don't like atheists or they, you know, might not have empathy for them or their causes, it's become normalized and it's not as...
Right, and that's what we need.
He's down. And I think that's a really positive thing as well.
Yeah, it's just like with the gay pride movement. They came out and everybody began to know somebody who was gay. And it's the same kind of thing. The more that we know people who are atheists and realize that they're just normal people with opinions about God, they're not all, and therefore they have no morals and they're, you know, running down the street apparently doing horrible things. It's insane the kind of things that they come up with. As soon as they hear the word atheist, it's just a projection of so much negative stereotypes, none of which have any foundation in truth.
Actually, the song that you played in the intro, My Morality, I wrote that as a response to a conversation that comes up really often when I talk to people that, obviously not everybody has that concept, but people say when you say that you're an atheist, oh, how do you know the difference between what's right and wrong, and how do you know how to be a good person? And it's shocking. Or even once was said to me, what's stopping you from raping and murdering everyone around you?
Which the irony in that is that the Bible is full of rape and murder.
Absolutely.
So that's the last book you want to read if you're trying to not rape and murder, because it's saturated with it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't know that, especially most a lot of religious people don't know that.
Right, and women don't exactly come out very well in the Bible at all.
Right.
Now, before we get into too much of that, I want to go back to your background a little more. How were you raised?
So I was raised in a traditional Jewish family. So my immediate family's not ultra-Orthodox. Some of my extended family are. But we kind of lived like a liberal or reform lifestyle, but didn't call, you wouldn't call yourself liberal or reform. But we attended an Orthodox synagogue, and, the kind where the women and men sit separately, and the women can't be involved in leading the service at all, and have to wear dresses and stuff. But that was the synagogue, and then I went to a Jewish school, like through kindergarten, primary school up to when I finished, and it wasn't an ultra-Orthodox school, but it had a big focus on Judaism and really, emphasizing your Jewish identity and getting involved in the community, and I was part of a Jewish youth group, the Zionist youth. Zionist socialist youth group, and I was a camp leader. I taught other kids how to be engaged with their Judaism. It's very good at it's a community, and it instills a strong sense of identity in you, and it's very successful at passing that on. It was at home more of an identity thing. And then at school and at synagogue a bit more into it than in the home. But my father actually is the president of the synagogue, one of the synagogues in the city, and he's very involved with the community. He actually has a Jewish wedding band, and that's how I learned to play music and how to sing and perform. Since I was 11, I've been playing in a Jewish wedding band.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, so I didn't really see the leap coming from Jewish wedding singer to atheist.
No.
Songwriter.
Well, let me ask you, when you look now at your community having a different belief system than a lot of them, are you still able to have a sense of community, or do you feel more isolated?
That's a good question. So as soon as I started to get a bit of distance, like when I first changed the way I saw the world, I felt very, very isolated.
Right.
And I was very shocked. I couldn't believe that I'd gone so long without seeing certain things. The main thing that stuck out to me was that I'd gone so long without taking issue with the religion's attitude towards women.
Hey, but you are only 25, so you didn't go that long.
And I felt like, I still feel like now it's progressive. I can't go into the synagogue. Like I wouldn't go for a service, but I used to go to watch my dad sing for important events. Things that were important to him.
Yep.
There's this one prayer once a year where my father would sing in a six-part harmony with his best friend and their son and my brother and the rabbi and his brother. And it was, like, really important to my dad, so I wanted to go and watch him. So I'd kind of stay outside for the prayers, and then just as dad would start singing, I'd come in, and I wouldn't stand in the segregated area with the women. I wouldn't make a big deal about it, but I'd just, you know, stand with the men because I'm not going to sit behind a curtain to watch my dad. And I'd watch it, and then I'd leave. But even now, I think it's gone to the fact I don't feel comfortable to be in there. So I feel like if I was there watching women and men be segregated in this way, I feel like almost
you're being a part of the problem.
Yeah, I feel compelled to speak out. And then part of me thinks, oh, well, you know, it's their space, and I'm coming in to tell, I shouldn't be telling them what to do in their space.
Right.
So I avoid that contradiction by not coming in at all. And but community-wise, I still feel, I mean, I don't really spend as much time and I'm not as involved as I was, but I still feel, you know, warmth from the people that I grew up with. And I still feel like the Jewish community can be very inclusive. The wider one, not the ultra-Orthodox community, but just the wider Jewish community here, can be very accepting. The Jewish News, the local Jewish paper, put about, you know, my atheist album.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's this attitude that I sometimes have arguments about it. They say, oh, you're still Jewish, you know? It's like, even though you're an atheist and you don't believe, I mean, in America it's very accepted for Jews to be atheists, and the focus is more on their identity and their culture rather than their religion, and I think that's true here as well, not as much as in the American Jewish community I found, but still very accepted, and so they think, okay, you're an atheist, you're doing this, but you're still Jewish, and your kids are still going to be Jewish. And I argue with them, you know, like I say, well, I don't, you know, that's only according to Jewish law, and I don't believe in Jewish law, so that has no, you know, holding with me. But so, I feel like there's no leaving the community once you're appointed.
It doesn't sound like it. Which isn't that bad a thing to still be connected to a community, because even though, like, I'm Southern, and I have a completely different belief system than pretty much everybody, it seems like.
Yeah.
But once they become familiar to you, they're always part of your collective history. Even if you would no more believe that now, you still have that history, that part of familiarity to it.
Absolutely. And I feel like, you know, that was the culture in which I was brought up, so it is a part of my life and my understanding, and was originally the lens through which I saw the world, and I feel like I can relate to those people because I understand where they're coming from.
Right.
And I think, as well, I think they do community really well. Obviously, that's the main pull of religion, is that it provides community for people, and it's appealing to the social aspects and desires that we have for community and security and validation, and it provides those things. I think, at least from my community, that the Jewish community does it really well.
Yeah.
Like, even the school I went to, it was a fancy Jewish private school, but what they did with the funding, they get funded by the community, and they make sure that anybody can go, whether you can pay the government fees or even if you can't. And it's a really good equalizer, so everybody in the community, no matter their financial standing, can have the same level of education. And I think, you know, that's a great model we should be able to.
Well, it also builds a stronger, well-educated community for them to continue with. You don't want to have the people that live with not have the same chance. And then later on, when you're in the middle of the fight, you're fighting with people with no education. So it's like you have to arm your soldiers with the tools they need to help protect everyone.
Yep, they educate keep everybody educated. They support each other. They, you know, frequent each other's businesses. It's such a good model for a community.
Yeah, it really is. I've deeply admired the community, but then again, then you have this other piece that is a complete contradiction. And that's where I hate that you have to be divided in any way from your community and your father and all the different choices you have to make because of your belief, when the community itself should have ways to incorporate all different beliefs if they really want all of their people to be able to live cohesively.
Yeah, I'm very lucky, you know, especially I've heard from so many people that I've met since I've been involved with this, you know, that they've been shunned by their families and their communities. So
yeah.
I've been really lucky in that sense that, you know,
And that's a real danger.
From my parents' house right now, they love me and they support me. My father actually accompanied me on the violin at the Global Atheist Convention.
Wow.
In Melbourne, which was just amazing. I'm so proud of him. And he's really supportive of me, despite our differences in belief. But with the whole community thing, I wish it's such a good model, and I wish that we could do that same thing, but just based on, like, our proximity to each other, you know? So, like, okay, we're going to support the community we're in because we live around those people. So
right.
We're going to help each other rather than we're going to support these people because they have the same beliefs as us, or they have the
right.
same shared ancestry, because that is divisive and exclusive. And I think it's such a nice thing if we could just apply that same feeling to a person just for their common humanity to us rather than a shared belief or a dogma.
Yeah, common humanity is definitely the answer in my mind. And maybe that's something that you will end up doing, bridging a lot of gaps that in your future. You seem to be a leader no matter where you go.
Oh, I hope so. It's nice to bridge gaps.
All right, so,
divide.
Yeah. So let's talk about the song Saved. Why did you write that song?
So I actually wrote that one very quickly. You know, sometimes songs will take a long time to write, and I wrote that in a night. Basically, I had a run-in with a street preacher in the suburb where I live, in Caulfield, which I sometimes joke, I don't think he was having much luck because it's a very Jewish area. He was going around preaching about Jesus. So he must have had a tough day. And we had a discussion, and he was telling me something about trees proving that the universe is only 10,000 years old. And he was so nice. Like, that was the thing. He was a really nice guy. And he was telling me, you know, coming up to me, invading my space, my privacy, and telling me that I'm living my life wrong. And that I'm going to hell, and I'm going to burn forever. And not, you know, not aggressively, not with any malice. Just
no, it's with compassion, because they actually believe that they are helping you, and they're trying to keep you from burning in hell.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, I can relate to that. It's like you feel like you have this truth and you're trying to share it. Like, it's beautiful.
Right.
It's not beautiful, but I mean,
for them it is. Yeah.
Yeah. What you're dedicating your time to trying to help me. Like, I can understand that that's coming from a good place. Not everybody is coming from that good place.
No.
This guy was. And still, I felt very angry. So then I went home after that. And I wrote Save pretty much straight away. And the message for me is, you know, I'm not going to be told by you how to live my life.
Right.
And if you are going, you know, to go out and tell me how to do and tell other people what to do, I'd like to know how you know what it is you know and what gives you the right to do that. On what evidence is this based? Like, so that's kind of what Saved is. And I never really, I tried not to make a statement in it of saying, like, this is not true, you're full of shit. it was more like a questioning thing.
Right.
The whole song is a series of questions.
Because I don't think most people, Christians, realize how offensive it is when they come up to us trying to save us.
No, I don't think they do. And I don't think they see the judgment in what they're saying either, because you're saying this one message of, oh, okay, only God can judge you, but I'm judging you right now as well.
And like somebody said, at this point, everybody knows about God. And it's really out there. We know. We don't, like, my husband and I are just sitting here minding our own business, and they're knocking on our door to tell us about God.
Yeah.
We know about God. We've got this covered. You just go on down the street and leave us alone. And this knocking on door thing and the spending your life trying to tell people about God, we already know.
And getting involved in politics and trying to legislate their morality to force us to do what they want.
Exactly. And so what I want to do is I'm going to play that song now for everyone. Is there anything else you want to tell us about the song before I play it?
No, just what I was saying before, that it's really a series of questions. And it's saying, you know, how do you know what you're saying? And does, you know, you're praising this God, but does he really deserve to be praised if he's sending us all to hell? That was
exactly.
One thing I liked. Yeah, so that's all.
Oh, that's all. Okay, we'll play the song.
Say that I need to be saved. Stay with me to give God his way.
love that song.
Oh, thank you.
When you were writing it, could you feel the energy of it, getting it all out of your system?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was serious.
I bet. You can feel it. Like, you know, in the concept of a loving God sending people to hell for not believing he exists is a bizarre concept to begin with. It's not, you're talking about like my way or the highway. What is more my way or the highway than if you don't believe in me, I will burn you for eternity?
You know? More than that, it's asking for love, you know, love me out of fear.
Right.
And I feel like asking people, okay, you know, they say, you're going to hell, it's not my judgment, it's God. It's like, well, that's fine. So if even if that was true, if God is judging that I deserve to go to hell, do you still worship him? Do you still put that judgment on a pedestal, or isn't there something inside you that says, no, that's wrong?
Yeah, how about supporting a person who has so many anger management issues that he damns people to hell and burns them for eternity? That's a little aggressive.
Yeah. But even if it was true, people, and people say, well, what would you do if you're wrong and it turns out that it's true? I still wouldn't worship him because I don't think he deserves that construct deserves my worship.
Right. Where's his humanity? Yeah, for the people he supposedly created, and let's go back to the creation piece again. It's like he created the tree of knowledge, and then they ate of it, supposedly. Why'd you create the tree?
Yeah.
Why even, so you started off messing with us from the beginning, putting little traps for us to fail. Why did you create the tree?
And the snake, and if you're omniscient, then you know that that's going to happen.
Right. So you, from the very beginning, created a trap to enslave all of humanity within this concept of sin. For what? For to have fun? What?
And
why
then,
would a loving God do that?
And apparently, supposedly, we're still dealing with the consequences of this today when women have painful or difficult childbirth, that's a punishment for this original
right.
sin.
It all goes
or
back to that one
we...
apple. That is the
yeah.
most expensive apple that's ever been eaten.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know if you can quantify the amount of money that was spent because that apple was eaten. So let's go into your song Eve and what made you write it?
Well, yeah, that's a good
transition
way to go into it, yeah, because I focused a lot on the creation story in the chorus. In that, Eve was inspired by a lot of things, I think, a subconscious build-up over time and then a very conscious one. So when we're talking about the creation story, yeah, there's the punishment for Eve and for eating the apple is a painful birth. And so anybody that's ever, you know, up until recently, how many women were dying in childbirth of complications,
right.
and the children were dying, and you have to think to yourself that this was a deliberate punishment for somebody else's sin, which is just unacceptable in my mind, morally. And then on top of that, you said that the tree of knowledge. So Adam and Eve weren't supposed to eat from the tree of knowledge. Why would this creator want his creations to be ignorant, to be in a state of ignorance? Why? We know that knowledge is power, education is power, and it helps lift our quality of life. Everything that we've learned has bettered our life. We don't die as often in childbirth anymore because of knowledge and information, and that's really the empowering thing that's making our life better. So not only are we being punished, but we're the goal is to keep us from this kind of growth and development. And that doesn't make sense to me. So I say that in the chorus, you know, my punishment for wanting to learn. And then also, I guess, just my personal experiences as a woman in religion, of not, of being segregated. We have in the shul, in the synagogue, the women sit upstairs, but if you, you know, if you can't get upstairs for any reason, they have a section at the back of the synagogue where the women can sit, and they, I think they changed it now to just a plank of wood, but for most of the time that I went there, it was a curtain,
right,
called a mechitza. So they have a, like a kind of see-through-y curtain in front of you, and it's just so...
Oh, no, I couldn't even imagine sitting in that. Now, the logic of that being that men need to focus on prayer, and that if women are bending over, it's too much of a temptation for them to be able to focus on what, on God? Is that the logic?
Yeah, I think it's just, for, you know, for both. And they say, oh, it's for the women, too, not to be distracted. But we can see the men standing there, you know, doing their thing, leading the service. And it's quite an insult to humans. I find it's, like, really insulting to our nature and our self-control to say that we can't even focus on an act without being distracted.
Right.
And people say, oh, it's just symbolic. It's like, no, it's symbolic. It's not. It may be symbolic, but it's also
actual.
A real thing. I'm actually sitting behind the curtain.
Right. And what does that do to the self-worth of a woman within that religion? To believe that they're... It's not like you're segregated in two places that are equal either. The men are sitting in the main area, right?
Yep.
And their voice is the main, if not only, voice that is being heard.
Yeah, well, women can sing along. Like, you can sing
together. Well, that's good. See, you can sing along. I don't know what your problem is.
But you can't lead the service. And I, even when I was a believer and I was involved in synagogue and I enjoyed, you know, being part of it, I couldn't understand why I couldn't sing. You know, I'm a singer. I like to be leading the thing, and I couldn't. But my brother and my dad did all the time, and I didn't understand why I couldn't be. And also, speaking of the voices, ultra-Orthodox men are not allowed to listen to a woman singing. So,
oh, really?
At the wedding, yep, it's apparently too arousy.
Too much for them, huh?
Yeah. So, you know, we would have times at religious functions that I would play it with my dad's Jewish wedding band. And we, you know, generally at a function, really religious people will leave about 9 o'clock, and then you can have mixed dancing or a woman singing, because while they're there, you can't have that. So sometimes I would get up to sing and someone would rap and say, you know, you can't sing yet. The rabbi hasn't left or something. It's crazy. And so that's another thing that I kind of put in a line in the song in Eve. The Bible says, I must be silent, you can't hear my voice. And that is kind of talking about the New Testament as well, which says, you know, a woman can't be... Is that
a teacher of men?
Yeah, a woman can't be a teacher of men, but also, you know, her voice shouldn't be heard in the church. So it's like from the teaching perspective, but then also just from my personal experience of my voice being something taboo.
Yeah, women need to remove themselves from that whole structure and create something based on humanity that actually gives them the power to be who they are.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And free of the confines and the strictures and of the definition of woman through a religious or biblical perspective of what, how a woman is supposed to be. And I think, like, you know, these ideas have been perpetuated through religion and they still have an effect today. They are partly responsible and perpetuating the intolerance that's caused by any challenge to this doctrine of what is a man and what is a woman and what are their roles.
And that's something we need to, especially as women, define now. We've gotten past the phases where we were property and we could be beaten with no recourse. And now we need to define what is religion to us, do we need it, not need it, and how to provide our daughters with something that doesn't make them feel less than. Because you should have never had to even endure that. You're trying to, when religion is supposed to be a spiritual thing that helps you become in tune with yourself and with the God, supposedly. But if it begins with, I created you less than, now follow me, how is that ever going to take someone to a spiritual path?
Yeah. I created you for man. That's your purpose.
Right.
The complete man. And someone next week was commenting on my song Eve online, and they said, you know, that's not an insult. It's a compliment that you're made to create, to complete man.
Yeah, it's a compliment.
So, yeah, that's...
You're just muddying the waters by wanting your own life and your own purpose. You were created for men.
And even that kind of stuff, like, that is oppressive to women and discriminatory, I still experience that mildly, only mildly compared to a lot of the people that I've met. There was this one prayer that we used to say in our school. I remember say it as a little kid. And it was part of the morning prayer, so you say it every day, to this prayer that goes back and forth between the men and the women. So, like, the men will sing one line of the prayer, and then the women, like, a call and response. And so there's this one part where the men say, I'm kind of paraphrasing in English because we say it in Hebrew, but the boys basically say, thank you, God, for not making me a woman. And then the women respond with, thank you, God, for making me what I am.
Wow.
And we said, I mean, we live in a modern, you know, we weren't even an ultra-Orthodox school. We were quite a liberal religious school. And we said that every morning as kids, little kids.
So you're being indoctrinated into a subservient role every single day with reinforced words.
Yeah, and you can explain that away as much as you like. And they try, you know, they say, oh, it's just that men have more responsibilities and in a religious thing, and it's actually harder, it's more of a burden, but they're happy about it. I said, well, if there's something to be thankful for, that you have that role, then that's, you know, why can't I have that? Why?
Right. Why are you more knowledgeable than I am?
Yeah. And you can try and explain it away as much as you like, but at the end of the day, they're saying, thank you that I'm not a woman.
Exactly.
And that's a difference between them. We're saying thank you for what we are. You know, we're still thankful for what we got, even though it's not as good as what they've got. And,
yeah.
It's
now, where did you get the strong sense of being a woman at such a young age? Because it seems like it really deeply offends you. And that usually takes years for a woman to come out of that and find that.
I think it's because of coming out of Judaism and then going back and seeing that in a different way. It struck me so much, and just the segregation of it, and to see it's been so normalized for people in this community that it doesn't even register with
right.
them that there's something wrong about it. So I think just like that kind of shocked me into saying like, well, my identity is so prescribed by how these people are defining it, so that kind of makes you investigate it more. Because, you know, they're saying how it is, so then...
Right.
Or they're saying what it is, so that makes you question, what is it? And that was another thing that I started to get, I guess, into feminism, or thinking about feminism
right.
in a different way. You know, I always thought it's just about, you know, equality, equal rights. And it is, but I thought, okay, that's it. So there's no need to look into it or read about it anymore. And then after I became an atheist and changed the way I saw the world, I started to realize, okay, so I've been duped, and the way I saw the world was not the way it is. And I wonder, in which other ways have I been duped, and in which other ways am I just taking for granted what I've been told by other people about reality. What
exactly.
Part of this,
and when you begin that process, it turns out to be a lifelong journey. It's something that I've been walking on for many years, where everything
yeah.
I thought was true turned out not to be. And to find the truth, you really have to dig. Because they've worked hard to put this mask on society of what's right and what's wrong. And they're not going to make it easy for you to figure it out, that logically this society lacks complete humanity.
It's your whole understanding of the world is painted by how other people have defined you and have defined...
Right. Before you ever stepped a foot on this earth, they already told you that you were less than.
So you have to start again, and you have to
ask
yourself, what is this? What am I? And it's so
What's
exciting.
My place?
It's like, here is a real, you know, this is the first investigation. Being involved in a religion, you know, I think in some ways it's, there is something admirable and important about investigating those questions of where am I, how did I get here, why am I here, where did I come, you know, like exploring and investigating the context of your own existence. Like, that's something I think is important. And after spending all your life in a religion that's supposed to do this, you leave and that feels like the beginning of the actual real investigation of those things. And it's wonderful, it's exciting, and
it is.
As soon as I feel a bit uncomfortable about something, like, okay, I better look at that more, because there's probably some
And there's traps everywhere. The deeper you get into it, the more you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is true and this is true. And it is. It is a exploration that... But it leaves you also, on the other end, knowing things that most people don't know. So there is an isolation to it, because just your knowledge of stuff is completely different than other people's knowledge.
Your worldviews start to get so far apart that you almost can't
communicate in a way.
Communicate anymore. And I feel like I can still relate to religious people because I understand that perspective because I've been there. So, but I feel like sometimes, not all the time, that they can't understand where I'm coming from.
They definitely can't understand where I'm coming from a lot of times. But I do understand their world because I came through that world to get to where I am now.
Yeah.
But it's definitely frustrating because the more you know, the more upsetting it is, especially if you have empathy for others and a rich humanity and longing for us all to have a safe place to be in this world.
Yeah.
Then if you have that, it's such... It's genocide, it's all kind of things that have happened, and everybody's just eating dinner and not realizing what history we're standing on.
Yeah.
So
I find not really aware of the consequences of their own beliefs, you know, even if it's not happening in your house.
Right. Like, even if you're in that bubble world and safe. Other people are not.
Yeah. And it may be, you know, people say, oh, it's a positive, this is very broad, but, you know, religion is a positive thing and it helps people. So, yes, possibly in a certain context it has some benefits, but if you take that away, in a different context, it's not. So just to have those rules is not necessarily, if you're just looking at the not the truth value of it, but of it for the betterment of society, it's not always going to work because situations change.
Exactly. I'm going to play your song right now, and then we'll come back and talk some more. Okay, this is Eve.
The Bible tells me I was made for and from man, and I must do for him everything that I can. I must surrender to his will, yeah, I must admit, I can't make the household decisions, cause I am unfit. It tells me my place with everlasting grace. The Bible tells me must be silent, you can't hear my voice. My role has been divinely defined, and I have no other choice. I may not be a teacher of men, I must cover up my shame. These are the laws of the one who in vain I cannot name. He tells me my place with everlasting grace and my punishment for wanting to learn. You cannot touch me, and it has nothing to do with where I've been. It is part of who I am. It is because I corrupt men. I was asking for this just by being a woman. He tells me my place with everlasting grace and my punishment for what.
Across you. There isn't a lot of atheist music out there, to my knowledge. Is there to you?
Well, I've learned about a lot more since I started doing this. And actually, have you heard of Grand Unified?
No, I haven't.
And have you heard of Great and Square?
No, you'll have to send me these so I can have them on.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, and so Great and Square is a rapper. He's like a hip-hop artist, and he's a veteran, he studied physics, and he's written some incredible music that really explores his atheism. And he's also started a collective, a musical collective, artist collective called Grand Unified. And there's a whole bunch of different artists that, I guess the goal of the collective is to promote critical thinking and science education through music. So
I would definitely love to have someone on the show to speak about that. And
yeah,
you could come back and co-host with me.
Oh, I'd love to. You should totally get onto those guys. And yeah, anyone that's looking for some more music, there's a whole bunch of artists at Grand Unified. And of course, there's Tim Minchin. I love Tim Minchin so much. And then there are artists that there'll be a song, you know, that we'll talk about. It might not be such a big theme in all of their music, but they'll mention it in a song or have one song about it. Yeah, I think there's a bit out there. Actually, also as well, the American Humanist Association released a whole blog about all different music, and they just launched a website called Kids Without God or Teens Without God, and it's a really cool resource. Like if you're a parent and you want something for your kids to kind of understand or be able to share with other kids to explain their perspective, it's a really cool resource. And they have heaps of music on there that's atheist themed.
Great. And I'll look into all that because I love having some music. Because, you know, when you listen to the regular mainstream radio and you're atheist, it can get very frustrating very quick. You know, even like that song, Jesus Take the Wheel. Every time I hear that, I start laughing. And I'm like, here's Jesus with all these wheels. What is he going to do? He can't drive them all at the same time. You know, I go on and on about that song. But it's like...
There's quite a lot of, reference.
Especially in the South, you know.
In pop music.
And country music. I like country music. It's just, of course, saturated with God. But
yeah.
I still like it, so it's very confusing. But I grew up on it. So, but now all I hear is God, God, God.
There's some beautiful Christian music, and I mean, you can put aside.
Right, I love gospel music.
I hope that's what people can do with it. You know, religious people. I hope they can still listen to what I'm saying and just appreciate it for.
I would love to hear gospel music. Well, I guess it wouldn't be called gospel music, but that same kind of message without the God piece. Because one thing that always bothers me about people is they're always giving their gift to God. I want to give thanks to, I scored this touchdown. I want to thank so-and-so. Nothing ever gets to come within a person say, I created that song. I did that. Yeah. Why is that such a horrible thing for us just to say? You know, I worked my butt off to write that song and make it happen. And then in the end, I want to thank God. God wasn't there when I was writing.
It's funny because I've had people say, oh, your voice is such a God-given gift.
Godsend, yeah.
And I say, God had nothing to do with it. I've been singing for 22 years. You know,
I worked hard to develop my voice and all these things. It's like, nope, God did it.
And in another way, like, it's actually quite... Like people don't think about it, but when they say, oh, thank you, God, for making this touchdown, or thank you, God, that I won this award, basically
You're dismissing what that person did.
It's not very humble because it's saying, God's done this for me, and not cognizing the fact that at the same time, God's not doing it for other people.
Exactly.
If that's his will, while you're winning this award, somebody is being, you know, horribly... murdered or
right. Somebody's cancer. Prayers wasn't answered because he was too busy helping you get that award.
Yeah.
the concept of prayers in itself, I like the fact of putting the energy out to the world of what you want to happen. That in itself is a beautiful thing that I believe in. But not taking any action and only putting that energy out, I do not believe in. I think we've got to take control of our lives, and there will be some twists and turns that are unexpected, but that's called life. That's not called God. It's just life.
But those either the ups and downs, or more especially the downs, and the suffering that is inherent in the human experience,
right?
It makes so much more sense from a godless worldview, from a perspective of that it's just random. Otherwise, it's quite confusing when you're suffering, you're going through pain, you've lost a loved one, or something unfortunate, and you believe in God, and you really believe that this God is looking out for you, it's so confusing of why you're having to go through this pain. It doesn't make sense.
And God answering prayers or not answering prayers, they always have this, you know, like song, I thank God for unanswered prayers. So no matter what happens, God comes out ahead. If he didn't answer, he knows better and he knew you didn't need it. You know, if he did answer, it's because he loves you so much. So there's so many phrases that we explain the justification for praying that logically don't make sense.
Yeah. When it works, it's a miracle, and when it doesn't, God works in mysterious ways.
Exactly. Very mysterious ways, apparently.
There was a great blog by a friend of mine, Holly Walling in Australia, and she, I think it was in the paper, which was pretty cool. She wrote an article, Why I Am an From a Wheelchair Perspective, Why I Am an Atheist. And she has a degenerative disease, and she was explaining, it was really a moving piece, why, you know, when she was a child and she was first diagnosed with her condition, that she was so upset and asking God, why did you do this to me? What have I done to deserve this, you know, terrible punishment? And then when she stopped believing, just how liberating that was, because you realize, like, oh, there's no blame. I haven't done anything wrong. I haven't deserved this. This isn't a judgment. It's just, you know, it's just a random chance occurrence. And that took away a lot of the anguish.
Yeah, because, like, you don't have enough problems being in a wheelchair that you also have to believe that a God that's supposed to love you put you in that wheelchair.
Yeah.
As some collective mystery that only he can know. It's like, thanks for making me a pawn in your game, you know.
Mm. When I think this is what karma is awful, like that, I find, to me, that your any suffering is because of something, it's deserved because of something you've done. And even something not you've done, but something you've done in a past life. You know, it's like you're responsible for earlier sins and, you know, earlier suffering that you're not even aware of.
Right. And that goes to the concept of original sin, which to me is one of the cruelest concepts that ever existed, that there is something wrong with you before you even step foot on this earth. You are flawed, and only they can help you get to heaven. So there's a middleman working to get us to heaven. And it's like, if there is a God, why would he need all these people that have to do man-made things in order for us to get to where we're going? You know, like I did a show where unbaptized babies couldn't be buried in cemeteries. And it's like, you judge a baby that's unbaptized as something, and yet the baby is the one with the sin, not the person judging the baby.
Yeah. And even, like, I guess kind of circumcision, speaking to that from the Jewish side, it's like there's something, the baby's born, created the way it is, but it's not right yet until you cut off its foreskin or you...
Exactly. Then why did he create it with that to begin with? You know.
Yeah. I guess that's the teamwork.
I know. It's like, teamwork, that's the answer. I knew it was some reason. So, tell us about your song, I Don't Believe in Fairies. I wonder how that came up.
Well, I actually heard a kind of bump, you know, like a big noise outside of my room one night, and I thought to myself, I'm so glad I don't believe in imaginary beings. I'm so glad I don't believe in ghosts, because it means I don't have to be afraid. And then I guess the idea for the song came straight after I had that thought, because I remembered being a kid and I remember hearing noises like that and being afraid. And then I realized, like, oh, it's so empowering. Like, you you learn that these things aren't true, and suddenly there's nothing to be afraid of, and you realize that it's just you. And it's just, it reminded me of becoming an atheist and stopping believing in God, and just that going through that experience and taking responsibility for your own future and for what's going to happen to your life, you know, letting go of, you know, you can't pray for an answer, or you can't pray for things to go the way you want. At the end of the day, you're responsible for you, and you're responsible for everything. And in some ways, that could be scary at first, but ultimately, I think it's so empowering.
Yes.
Because it gives you, it's just you. That's what I'm saying in the lyrics, like, when you're in a dark place, when you're having a hard time, there's nobody you can rely on except yourself. And I think that's a really powerful thing.
And nothing can be more empowering. And again, the purpose of religion, in theory, is to help you develop yourself on a spiritual plane. But in reality, it does the complete opposite.
It's saying that you're helpless without God. I've heard so many people say that. You know, I'm nothing without God. I couldn't do what I did without God. I don't believe that. I think that's demoralizing. I think people can achieve things on their own. And even more, achieve more with a strong sense of self-worth.
Absolutely. And that's something that is beautiful within being around your spirit and listening to you, is that you have such a strong sense of who you are. And that's what's carried you through all these times where they told you that you were less than, and they weren't able to take away your voice. And even at a young age, I'm sure you've been fighting this for a long time.
I'm very lucky about that. My dad and my mom have always been really supportive. I have a song I made for my dad on my YouTube channel that talks about, like, you know, they just always said to me when I was a kid, you're great, you know, you're a good person, you can do anything that you want, and I feel like that's ingrained in me, indoctrinated in a sense. I think that's a great thing to teach kids, you know, you can do whatever you want if you work hard, and that there's something, you're valuable, there's something valuable about you, and it's great. Actually, I got a really cool email the other day from a family in Florida, and their daughter, she's 6 years old, Annika, she's really sweet, and at first she was a bit confused by the song, I Don't Believe in Fairies. You know, she likes fairies.
Yeah, it's like, forget the God part. Are you saying there's no fairies?
Yeah, exactly. But she, you know, they talked about it a bit, and now she knows all the words to the songs. And her mum emailed me and said that the other day she listened to it, and then she said, "Mum, that song makes me feel brave." And that was like, I think, like, it's just, it's so wonderful. Because that's what I wanted it to say.
And now within that child's life, when people say that she's less than, it won't connect because she already has these other words.
Yeah.
And that's powerful.
That's amazing. I always say, like, you know, music is so, I've always felt that way, like music has been so powerful in my life and such an amazing influence, and I always said that, you know, that music has that power, and it's pretty amazing to put something out and hear back that is the case to people. Like, it's really great.
So what is it, where are you going from here, and what are your dreams?
I guess I've always wanted to make music and communicate to people the way I see things. That's always been what I wanted to do, but since I started to get involved in secular activism, activism of any kind, and connecting that with my music, I think that's my goal now,
And you'll be very good in that community. I think you'll get even stronger. I can't wait to even see you 10 years from now. And
I just
want to
write about so many different things. You know, I'm amazed that I could do that because for so long, you know, I'd write about things that were much closer to home. You know, like still things that are broadly applicable and I think are important, like human relationships and love and
right.
the way we reach each other and these things. But to put like you know, a political stance or raise awareness about a particular issue in music is like it's been so exciting. So I really want to keep doing that and do that more and learn about different issues and explore them and find different ways of expressing them. I'm excited.
Oh, and the fact that you've started so young means you don't have to waste as many years as, say, I did or others in undoing it because you got it very early. And I think that's something that this generation of children are being given is the chance to explore more than we had.
Yeah, there's so much out there as a resource for me when I first started changing my mind about things. And from speaking to other people in the movement, I think that's relatively new, just all the support out there and just, yeah, the resources, the information, books. I said that years ago it wasn't as much part of the...
Oh, yeah, you would have never been able to find this information like this before. And the social media sites have become a good resource to help people when they are thinking about coming out as an atheist to not feel isolated and feel like they've lost their whole world.
And the Clergy Project, have you heard about that?
The what?
The Clergy Project?
No, what is that?
Oh, so cool. So it's online community support group for clergy, for members of clergy who are having doubts about their beliefs, but they, you know, are struggling with the obvious consequences of them
right.
saying that out loud. Especially, it's a unique situation, and it would be very difficult, I imagine. You know, you're brought up in a religion. Sometimes you become a preacher such a young age, like 11 or something, and for something you've been involved with your whole life, it's your only skill set. A whole community of people are dependent on you, and
right.
you know, you're fulfilling your role to them. You have spouse and children, a family, and everything is centered around that part of your life. And then all of a sudden, you know, you start to question it and you don't believe. So there's a support group online, and it's anonymous, and it provides a
place. Oh, I would love to look at that, and for various reasons of other work that I do, I'd love to see
yeah,
their logic.
And a lot of people have been, you know, they've had that support, and then they've come out and found the strength to leave their communities and to I guess be honest with their communities about their change of heart. And then, and that's quite difficult as well, because how do you make a living afterwards? There's some real...
Yes, because some of these priests have pension plans as well. So when you come out and all, you jeopardize your pension.
And then it's not even just you, it's your family as well. A
good
right. person to talk to about that is Jerry DeWitt. Have you heard of him?
No.
He's been through this program, you know, he communicated online with people and then he's come out and now he's a fantastic voice, you know, for secularism, and he's speaking all around the country, and he had a story in the New York Times from pastor to atheist speaker, and yeah, he's lovely.
It sounds like I have a lot of exploring of your network to for possible show guests coming up.
Yeah, definitely. There's heaps of great people to talk to there.
And I love having all those type of people on. They're always so well educated and just compassionate, and I just love speaking with them and hearing their logic and their stories of how, you know, this is becoming a very strong movement, and the churches are getting less and less. So
yeah.
Within another 20 years, it's possible that the churches are going to be in real trouble, because this next generation, once this 40-plus is no longer here, they're having real trouble connecting to the youth and getting them in church.
Yeah, they're trying to change the marketing, I guess. Right,
but what happened is they lost control of the children's education, where before children were forced to go to it, and now they're not. And that's where they can't control that piece with marketing to get somebody young and to indoctrinate them into that concept early.
But they're trying.
They're definitely trying, but they've lost a lot of ground, and I'm very happy about it. So maybe one day our politicians will look silly up there talking about God and praying. What?
I imagine they will, but it feels like a really exciting time in America at the moment.
Yeah.
Just seeing the movement be so strong and meeting all these incredible people who've had incredible experiences, journeys, and they're sharing that, and they're, you know, it's getting mobilized, it's getting organized, and it's pretty exciting to see.
So what would you say to somebody right now who is questioning their beliefs but don't know where to go? What would you say to them?
I would say to go online. I mean, a great resource is the American Humanists. They have newsletters where they...
Yeah, they're on Facebook as well.
Yeah. So many groups on Facebook. There's a group called Recovering from Religion, and they're a support group that was founded by Darrell Ray. They meet up in person, and they have small groups, and they, you know, they're a community that support each other. After, you know, you've left a community, or if you're thinking about leaving, you know, they'll support you. So there's options online. You can go online and into forums, and you could probably just type in atheist groups in your area, and you can find a local meetup group of people who maybe just do a social thing. They might just go and meet up and have a drink together and a discussion, or they might be a bit more active. They might do, like, charity drives, or they might be, like, a really, really forward political group who are actively campaigning in their community. So there's, like, all different levels of ways that you can get involved.
Right. It depends on who you are and what skills you have.
Yeah.
The way you end up.
And people who are just coming out might not feel comfortable being, like, really politically active and really, you know, out there and aggressive, so that it might just be better to go to a gathering and meet people and talk about what you're experiencing. But there's, it's a pretty great time to be going through that because of what's available.
Right, considering what people before had to go through, it's come a long way. Yeah, we still get judged, but not near the level that we did before. And maybe the next couple of generations, everybody will be indifferent to it. And that's what we really want, is everybody to be able to have whatever belief they have without all this judgment and, you know, threats of hell and nobody. This concept of original sin needs to get out of our society, because it's making our society toxic to begin with the concept that we're flawed as human beings before we ever enter into this world.
Yeah. Is there any groups where you live?
Most of mine I do online, but every time I look, they're all over the place. Even the reddest states have it, and you can find it. With now that the internet exists, there's no reason why you can't find some community that fits your needs, whatever they are.
Yeah, I think even if you live, you know, in a remote area, it might be a bit of a schlep to go right. out to a group, but you could still chat to them online.
Yes, there's online, I think, is a great place to begin. Even YouTube itself has all kind of videos. It's just, it's everywhere. So just begin your journey and let it take you to where you need to go. And they can always begin at your site. So what was your webpage again? I want to make sure everybody remembers what it is.
It's ShellySiegel.com.
And they can sign up to get a subscription, right, as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, you can subscribe to my newsletter, which I haven't sent out yet, but I will. yeah, you can leave me a voice message, and I'll send you one back. And, yeah, I'm happy to talk to anyone about it, anything. I've really enjoyed hearing from people about, you know, their thoughts and what they're going through particularly. And yeah, if anyone wants some suggestions of groups to or resources to get in touch with, like, you know, it's pretty easy to find, but I'm happy to talk to you about it.
And you're on iTunes, and I saw you on Amazon, so you're available all over the place. Your CD is, right?
Yep, you can get it anywhere. Bandcamp is probably the best. I really like Bandcamp. It's the same price, but they give the artist more, and they're very, like, artist-focused, and I like Bandcamp a lot. It's a really cool website. If you buy music, that's an awesome website.
Oh, great. You just have all kind of great information. I'll have to get with you later and start exploring all this. Now, can you, so the name is an atheist album, correct?
Yes.
Do you have more coming out?
Yep. So I guess for my upcoming projects, I have an album that should be coming out early next year. That's not as political. There's a lot of love songs and a song about Morocco. And there's a song, one of my favorite songs on that album, has got like a real kind of humanist message to it. But yeah, that's, I guess, a bit more lighthearted. And, then I'm doing a jazz folky album. I'm actually recording next month in LA with a really, really talented guitarist named Adam Levy. And he's a singer-songwriter as well, so we'll be doing that album together. And then after those two, I'll be releasing another secular-themed album, which my morality will be on. And a few other songs. I'm about halfway through that, so I'm, really looking forward to recording that one.
How did you get so connected to the USA with your work?
Just through word of mouth, through Facebook, really. Like, I put up my videos for Saved on YouTube, and it started to get shared around in the atheist community, and I think it just had the most resonating effect with America.
It is a small world now with the social networks. I have friends all over the world, and it feels like they're right next to me now. So we're not as divided.
Amazing. We can just hear straight away what's happening anywhere from the people themselves documenting it. Yeah, pretty cool.
It's very cool. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. And before we close, I want you to tell us anything else you wanted to say about I Don't Believe in Fairy song or anything else at all on any of it.
Another thing about I Don't Believe in Fairies that I enjoyed was putting the gods in the same category.
Like how you did that.
As other mythological creatures. Because that's, you know, it's so easy for anyone of a particular religion to look at other creation stories and say, oh, they're obviously myths. And it's a lot harder to look at your own. I think it's important to see all the belief systems in the context of other ones, then it becomes obvious, I think. And so I liked doing that. And yeah, just that what we were talking about before, that message of self-empowerment, of everything being your own responsibility. And also, I want to say thanks so much for having me, Neil, and I really enjoyed talking to you.
I will be seeing more of you because we seem to have a lot in common, and I'm very excited about how curious you are of the world as I am. So I'm sure our networks will cross many times over.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to listening to some of your old shows.
And so we're going to go ahead and play the song, and
yep.
I hope you have a lovely day because it's like 9 a.m. or 9:30 in the morning over there.
Yeah, can you hear the birds chirping outside?
I know it's getting late here, so it's so interesting how that we're so far different in time. That's a crazy world. Well, you have a wonderful day, and thank you so much for coming on, and definitely keep us in touch with what you're doing, and we'd love to have you back on.
Thanks, I'd love to.
All right, this is I Don't Believe in Fairies.
I don't.